My guest at this time is Steve Russell, who served 21 years in the United States Army as an infantry officer. He served in both Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as other operations earlier in his career. During his time in Iraq, he was in command of the 1st Battalion, 22nd Infantry Regiment of the 4th Infantry Division. And they have the distinction in American history and world history of being the group that eventually found Saddam Hussein. His time in Iraq, as well as the hunt for and the eventual apprehension of Hussein, is chronicled in the book We Got Him, A Memoir of the Hunt and Capture of Saddam Hussein. And Colonel Russell, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start, I guess, at the beginning, because it was about 9 months after we went into Iraq that eventually found Saddam. But, of course, the first order of business was major combat operations. What was your unit tasked with doing in the beginning?
In the beginning, we had hoped to come in north through Turkey, but the political situation being what it was, that wasn't possible. So we actually got into the ground war later than the other ground units as a result of having to go through Kuwait and up north. We still went to our northern objectives, and our particular battalion found itself fighting elements north of Saddam's hometown of Tikrit, and then one of our companies went all the way to Mosul with another unit cross-attached. And that's really how we became involved with the hunt for Saddam. When major fighting with land units ended with Saddam's army, we were given orders to occupy the city of Tikrit. And because of the geography of it, that's how we became involved.
Was it generally assumed that he would be somewhere near his hometown, or was that just kind of the working theory at the time?
I think early on we all thought that if he had any sense, he would have fled. When American forces surrounded Baghdad, he gave his last public appearance, and he made his way out in a car driven by a man that became very crucial to his capture later. What we didn't know is that he went to the town of Hit and actually made his way back to Tikrit very early on. We got indication of that in the first week of June as things began to develop.
Obviously, you're not sure who you can trust, who you can't, especially in the hometown of someone like Saddam Hussein. So what was the general strategy in trying to cover such a relatively large area?
My infantry battalion was just a conventional regular unit, but we had some special operations troops that operated in our area, and one particular team led by a man I'll call Jack, he was on the hunt for some of the top-tier deck of cards guys. And what we found is a lot of those folks were in our area, and we were receiving incredible information from our local human intelligence that we were developing. And so we formed a very close, early on, relationship between conventional and unconventional forces. And putting our heads together, we developed a three-tiered strategy to go after kind of the middle group, which was Saddam's social networks and his bodyguards that had protected him before he was overthrown from power. And by focusing on that group, we thought that it would lead us to the big guys, or maybe even the big guy, and that's exactly what happened.
What was it like to find out that people who were pretty loyal when everything was going well, how they acted when he wasn't in charge anymore and they're probably looking out for their own necks?
Well, I think that they were really caught in between everything. They were very loyal until they were caught, or in some cases, until they were killed. When they were, though, I think they recognized that we certainly drew the noose tight enough around Saddam that by the time we got to the end of the year, most of them were on the run and could not stay in one place for any length of time, although we know now that Saddam had been in hiding in the same general area for months.
In terms of his home area, you'd think that would be his home base of support, and you mentioned that those who had worked for him had protected him. Many of them remain loyal, but even as, obviously, the Kurdish population and the Shia population pretty much despised him, what did you find in the population in general right around Tikrit? Were most of them at least tacitly supportive, or were a lot of those folks glad to see him gone too?
They were very loyal. You had probably the majority that were loyal to Saddam. It was a 98% Sunni area, so they would recognize a Kurd or even a Shia Arab pretty quick. However, Tikrit, with no natural resources, was a government town, and their whole world was revolved around Saddam's importance because they drew their own identity from it. So it was a very tough nut to crack. And, you know, many people think that the Saddam capture was a bloodless affair, and it wasn't. We had heavy fighting in the six-month period that leads up to that. And that's what this book chronicles, is that it talks about the American and Iraqi blood and treasure and the sacrifices that went in that six-month manhunt to get to that hole.
What about operations in addition to the larger operation for the search? Given some of the instability that happened after major combat operations, how much were you drawn into that as well?
After we had fought elements of the Republican Guard in their last vestiges of resistance in late April, the month of May was really kind of an unknown. Would they acquiesce? Would they support the new government that was emerging? Would they try to get to work to the new task at hand, or would they resist and would they fight? And we gained very early indication that Saddam's whole plan had been to solidify and start an insurgency, and he was doing it in our area as its headquarters. And so where other parts of Iraq were facing far less resistance, the 4th Infantry Division, in particular our area in Tikrit, with Saddam's cronies and the Fedayeen that were fighting us, there was a lot of action. And people have misread that. In fact, the book, I think, will fly in the face of these popular writers who were writing us off as heavy-handed or a bunch of idiots that didn't know what we were doing or what we had when we entered that first year in Iraq. The book absolutely will tear that to pieces.
We're talking with Steve Russell. He is the author of We Got Him. And as we get closer here in our narrative to the capture, you mentioned before the strong loyalty in Saddam's home base there. So how tough was it to get some of the human intelligence that ultimately led you to where he was?
We were fortunate with the local Iraqis. And I think we took a very aggressive footing. Jack's team, when they came in, I believe it was late May, early June, and then my battalion trying to get its footing now that we were occupying the city of Tikrit, we worked very closely with one another, sharing our intelligence. My commander, Colonel Jim Hickey, who ultimately would lead the raid that would get Saddam, we all understood that Saddam likely could be in the area, that his support was there. So it was really sleuthing, and what we couldn't find through informants, we found through a lot of raiding, and we would go after these people in the social networks, these five controlling families, a couple of other families in addition to them. And by going after these bodyguards and middle-tier guys, we were thinning the ranks, and that got people on the run. They would flush. We would find them. One thing would lead to another, and before we knew it, we had Saddam down to just a handful of guys that were trying to protect him, and eventually we were able to find his location.
You describe it so well in the book. You had one person there in your custody, this Muhammad al-Muslid, I guess is how you say it, and then he saw Saddam's cook and the glances that you were able to interpret between the two about how close you were. What was the moment you knew that, even though you didn't have him yet, that you knew it was very, very close?
I think we knew the night before, in all honesty. When the special operations team, the first one that we worked with, traded out, a new one came in led by a guy I'll call John. And I had a lot of anxiety about that transition because we had worked so well with our special operations guys that we didn't know would they trust regular conventional forces with the time of day, you know, that we were as competent in sleuthing a lot of our area as anybody. And fortunately, John was a fabulous warrior, and we were able to work hand-in-hand, did not skip a beat, put together a series of great raids over the ensuing months. And it really kind of snowballed at the end of November. We got a lot of information. When we would get a big catch, it's like the Iraqis would relax and ease up, and more information would be given to us. And we finally got tips from December 4th to December 11th in a series of three major raid efforts that put us on to this Muhammad al-Muslid that you mentioned. He had nine other brothers. We had captured a few of them. One had even died in custody. But we felt that if Muhammad al-Muslid were ever captured, he had to know Saddam's location. And so when he was found as a result of these raids, four or five possible locations, all of them hit, he was captured in Baghdad. Colonel Hickey and I and John and others were elated because we felt he had to know Saddam's location, and he did. In fact, we had Saddam within 24 hours of that capture.
And so when you finally found him in the spider hole, he immediately wanted to negotiate, wasn't exactly in a position to negotiate. What were your orders at that point?
I was actually a part of the forces in the cordon to the west of the farm. We surrounded the entire area so that he could not escape. I mean, the man was very good at being on the run and being elusive. And so Colonel Hickey put together a plan whereby John's team, supported by two other teams from Baghdad, would hit a couple of these farms that we had interest in. And then you had the other elements of Jim Hickey's brigade, of which my battalion was a part. We would cordon the whole area and surround it so that he would not escape, and we would search every square inch. And as things began to unfold, still nothing. And had Muslet not been brought in tow, Saddam could very well that evening have escaped capture. The hiding place was so clever, and it had been walked by, stepped on, everything, still not noticed. But Muslet fingering that, the rest is history.
I certainly remember that Sunday morning first hearing about the news. I'm sure most Americans do. As you look back at your service in Iraq, and particularly at this mission, what gives you the greatest sense of pride?
As I look back on, you know, we were so heavily engaged in those operations at the time, in the fighting, in the raiding, in mourning the loss of our friends, everything. It did not seem as impossible as it does now as we look back on it. It really is a remarkable story that you read in the book about just regular soldiers working hand-in-hand with a very small, lower-level conventional, unconventional troops that were very elite forces. But it's not like all of this was directed on high in some grandiose sheen. It was regular soldiers and unconventional soldiers believing in what we were doing, that he could be caught and that we would continue to go after him. And I think that people will be inspired by the story. If it's worth doing, don't quit. You just don't know what might result when everybody else has given up hope.
Well, we strongly recommend the book. It is an incredible story, and it's hard to believe it's been 8 years already. Colonel Russell, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it, and I'm thrilled that our soldier's story of sacrifice is finally being told.
Colonel Steve Russell commanded the 1st Battalion of the 22nd Infantry Regiment, 4th Infantry Division in Iraq. He is now the author of the book, We Got Him, a memoir of the hunt and capture of Saddam Hussein. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.